definition, turning your play into a tragedy. Exhibit level degree on the mic, passionately. This is sweet, so I bet if I bid, I get a cavity. Living to get high, you ain't flyer than gravity. We die hard like the battery, thrown in the back of me by the mad MC. Think imitation's the highest form of flattery. Actually, don't be mad at me, I had to be the one to break it to you. You be kicked into obscurity like judo. No menudo, cause you pseudo. Trying to compete for reality like Xerox. Towards destruction, you're spiraling like hairlocks. Wipe some teardrops, chase the stars in your eyes. Playing games with your lies. Letterwise as widows, soaking up pillows, weeping like willows. Still no blacks are dying, cause they living, they trying. How to make a slave by Willie Lynch, you're still applying. Regardless, the most is one of my closest partners. Rocking ever since before Prince was called the artist. Rocking before, fuck Master Flex was rocking daughter. With Pac and Big.
And good morning. Welcome to another episode of Quest Youth Radio. Quest Community Vibrations once was the name. Now, music like poetry has a message, and history like a diamond shines clear to the truth. Words have meanings that we can comprehend like definitions. And news can show us a chain of events that we may not always understand. Now, I'm asking you to pull back our musical curtain to see and hear the contributions of our diaspora, and you will find our Quest moment where we attempt to make waves, indeed vibration. And so thank you once again for joining us to hear a different perspective of our community. And again, I can't say it enough, welcome for another Power Pack program. Pierce will host and his produced segments of Diamonds, Definitions, and Curtain. And myself, Mr. Bay, will narrate the transitions of today's featured guests, which include Mr. Shelton Harris, Tamir Davis, Tanisha Garner, and our online fan who will be allowed to analyze today's broadcast. So sit back, relax, and don't you go anywhere. And Walter Pierce will be right up next. Good morning, Walter. How are you?
Yes, good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations. We're live on 89.5 from the campus of Seton Hall in South Orange. Good morning. And to start off the show, I want to start off with the diamond. And see, history is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply, and you are bound to find yourself. Now, for my diamond for today, it is an unsung hero, in my opinion, and a woman in the business field that a lot of people do not know about. And her name is Maggie Lena Walker. And Walker was born to enslaved parents on July 15, 1864, in Richmond, Virginia. After the Civil War, her mother worked as a laundress and her father as a butler in a popular Richmond hotel. Walker's father was killed, and she had to help her mother financially by working. Although his death was ruled a suicide, Walker later revealed that she believed he had been murdered. She attended a local school in Richmond and upon graduation began teaching. She stepped down from teaching after she married a successful brickmaker. When Walker was 14, she joined the Independent Order of St. Luke's, an African-American benevolent organization that helped the sick and elderly in Richmond. Within the organization, Walker held many high-ranking positions. In 1902, she began publishing the organization's newspaper, the St. Luke's Herald. She encouraged African-Americans in Richmond to harness their economic power by establishing their own institutions through the newspaper. Walker had always focused her efforts on accounting and math. Her first business endeavor was a community insurance company for women. From there, she continued her entrepreneurial pursuits. In 1903, she founded the St. Luke's Penny Saving Bank. Walker was the first woman of any race to charter a bank in the United States. The bank was a powerful representation of black self-help in the segregated South. The Penny Savings Bank not only attracted adults, but Walker worked to appeal to children by passing out banks, which encouraged them to save their money. She continued working for the Order of St. Luke, but also held leadership positions in other civil organizations, including National Association of Colored Women, as talked about last week, NACW. She also served as vice president of the Richmond chapter of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored Women. NAACP. By 1924, the Penny Savings Bank had spread to other parts of Virginia and included more than 50,000 members. While other banks collapsed during the Great Depression, St. Luke's Penny Savings survived. The bank eventually consolidated with two other large banks and moved to downtown Richmond. It is still in operation today. And after an illness in 1928, Walker was forced to use a wheelchair. Although limited in her movements, Walker remained a leader in the Richmond African American community. She fought hard for women's rights as well. For much of her life, Walker served as board member of the Virginia Industrial School for Girls. And on December 15, 1934, Walker died from complications due to diabetes. And that concludes my segment on Maggie Lena Walker. Just to sum up again, you know, somebody in the business field that we don't hear about at all, but her impact is so prominent for the coming up of African-American banks in America. She was the first woman of any color, not just black, of any color, to have her bank, to have a bank, as stated here. And, you know, that, and then later on, you know, she also not just wanted to help the families and, like, the adults. Her helping the kids learn how to save money and manage is also very important to the future generation. So we have to give her a shout out for also focusing on that. And, you know, she also participated in NACW, which was last week when we talked about Frances Ellen Watkins Harper, also was the creator of that organization, and she was a part of it. So, you know, it's just a very prominent woman in the African American community. I encourage everybody, you know, to look her up and to talk about her, because her impact is very important, even though she's not talked about a lot. So again, thank you for listening, and you are tuned in to 89.5 WSOU.
Great job. Be optimistic.
You can win as long as you keep your head to the sky. Be optimistic.
Winning up there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, welcome back, and we now turn it back over to our student host, Walter Pierce. Take it away.
Yes, welcome back, everybody. And again, you are tuned in to 89.5 WSOU. And to continue on with the show, I want to go into a definition. And see, definitions. This segment provides the listener with words and their meanings so that we can achieve together a common basis to say we care and we believe in ourselves. Remember, whosoever controls our definitions controls us. We must define existence and not have it defined for us. And my definition for today is revolution. And see, there's multiple definitions of revolution. And, you know, there's two ones I want to focus on. It's a forcible overthrow of a government or social order in favor of a new system. And there's also another one, which is, I have a dramatic and wide-reaching change in the way something works or is organized or in people's ideas about it. So basically, you know, we have a change in the order or a change in the law. And that's really what I wanted to focus on today, because I believe that's what we're going through right now in our African American communities. You know, I believe we're still not at that point yet where we could be comfortable in the way leadership is in our communities. But I believe we're getting to a point, we're getting to that point. And the reason I'm saying that is because, you know, now I'm seeing more leaders in the in City Hall in our communities, especially, you know, North East Orange areas. We're seeing more Black-owned businesses now than ever, I feel like, in our communities as well, all across the country. We're seeing a whole lot of African American leaders, you know, in our schools, just everywhere in our communities, trying to make an impact and trying to encourage the younger generation to make that same impact. And this is important because this shows how us as young teenagers or young adults could actually be leaders and could succeed in it. Because I remember, you know, when I was younger, like this is like going back 10 plus years ago, you know, I will always, when we will be in elementary school, we'll always see, you know, a white guy. And every time we'll see him come into the school, you know, we always think, okay, he's somebody in power. He's the top of something. You know, that's usually what it was. It was a white guy coming in who was prominent in something, trying to teach us something. But, you know, now I see more of our people coming in, you know, trying to spread knowledge and are actually the leaders of an organization, which is very prominent, you know. And I want to also, you know, throw in another part of the revolution definition, you know, when they talk about overthrowing the government. On March 5th, it is Crispus Attucks Day. And, you know, for schools, we take a half a day off for Crispus Attucks Day. And, you know, Crispus Attucks was the first person shot in the Boston Massacre. And we believe that those shots started the American Revolution. And, you know, that's the reason he's prominent, because, you know, once those shots went off and the American Revolution started, you know, they had African Americans, you know, fighting the war against the British for their freedom and for the separation of Britain from America. So I just also wanted to throw that in there. But, you know, before I end the segment, I want to pass it on to you, Mr. Bay, and I want to ask you just one question. You know, do you believe that, as I said first, you know, the change in leadership in our communities to people that look like us, are you seeing the same things I am seeing? And do you believe that is very important for a community to succeed.
The night while I'm toasting around Kelly Drive, taking a scenic route over to the west side. I see this little streaker light flicker in the sky. Since the stars are radiating bright, I'm paying it no mind. Never once considered no sign of any kind. Extend my arm, turn the car stereo to nine. Head gorgeous by Silk 130 on auto rewind. About the third time it played, heard the beat sound, thought it was a part of the fade. Slightly phased, I pull over to investigate. Beat turn into a speech, making my ears ache. And the ground vibrate, and my body levitate. In the hypnotical state, in the direction I face. Hesitate, too late, fell for the bait. Best bet, play safe, cooperate. Whether in over my head or whatever the case. By chance, by fate, God thought of it for me, no mistakes. Transcend physical, elevate. Time one way, move on, face, explore. By chance, by faith. God thought of it for me, no mistakes. Transcend physical, elevate. Time one way, move on, face, explore. Okay, so I'm like floating along, tranquil feeling, sorta like I'm huffing the bone. Then I hear a voice telling me, relax, stay calm. Suddenly I'm conscious, saying the 23rd Psalm. Human-like figure approaching with open arms. Bad pole, naked, nice joint, glowy palms. Gentile grill, not intimidating at all. Medium built, height about 5'10", brown skin. Looking like an African, suiting needs or something. Couldn't believe I wasn't petrified, feeling like I had to pee or nothing. So I was throwing to the ground so my feet could touch it. By chance, by faith. God thought of it for me, no mistakes. Transcend physical, elevate. Time one way, move on, face, explore. By chance, by faith. God thought of it for me, no mistakes. Transcend physical, elevate. Time one way, move on, face,
now eye to eye with this like alien guy. By chance or fate, this place and time. Could it be coincidental that I passed a line? He replied, no, like he could read my mind. Believe that I'm pleased to find you're the second specimen I done seen of your kind. Analyzed then, I must admit you're some fine advertisement for earthlings who keep the inner light shining. You got an aura that glows like a diamond to penetrate every realm that I dwelt in. Cause of your passion and life for excelling, you will to yourself the situation that you fell in.
By chance, by faith, God thought of it for me, no mistakes. Transcend physical, elevate. Time one way, move on, faith, explore. By chance, by faith, God thought of it for me, no mistakes. Transcend physical, elevate. Time one way, move on, faith, explore. By chance, by faith, God thought of it for me, no mistakes. Transcend physical, elevate. Time one way, move on, faith, explore. By chance, by faith, God ordered it for me, no mistakes. Transcend physical, elevate. Time one way, move on, your faith explore.
about the French I took, but I do know that I love you, and I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. Don't know much about geography, don't know much trigonometry, don't know much about algebra, don't know what a sliding room is for.
Okay, so I made the major mistake of muting myself while Walter was doing his presentation. And so I was trying to figure out why everyone was trying to interrupt me while I was doing the segment, and I didn't realize what was going on. So my apologies to everyone out there on the team.
Right.
I'm okay, Mr. Harris. And let me go back to Walter. Walter, did I answer your question, first of all?
No, we didn't hear you. You need to repeat it.
Okay. Yeah, I have to laugh at myself. My apologies again. Basically, my answer was in instances of leadership, I talked about Walter Fields, who's a journalist, and he said there, you know, he had issue with, you know, first black this, first black that. And at the end of the day, the bottom line has everything to do with what policies you put in place, what differences you make for the people that you in leadership of to make a change for the better. In other words, in short, to be a public servant is to serve the people and not to serve yourself, not to be a self-serving leader. And so your question was direct in asking me, do I see a number of black people in leadership? And the answer is yes. And we need to be able to hold them accountable. They need to be wanting to be accountable to the people that they serve. And I just wanted to put that emphasis on there. And again, I ask you, did I answer your question this time?
Yeah, yes, you did. And again, I appreciate your response. And I guess that concludes this segment, and you're listening to 89.5 WSOU.
Okay. So since Walter made that clear, I'm going to continue again with chains of events. Chains of events is an interpretation of the news as it affects the minority community from the Alloys of North. And it's a report on events in politics, education, law, business, religion, and science. But more importantly, for this particular segment, we're talking about health and mental health. And chains of events reveals the interpretation of one event to another so that you, the Quest listenership, will know what's happening. Now, many times we don't understand what mental health is. And just to give you a definition, from mentalhealth.gov, mental health includes our emotional, psychological, and social well-being, and it affects how we think, feel, and act. It also helps determine how we handle stress, relate to others, and make choices. Mental health is important at every stage of our life, from childhood and adolescence through adulthood. Over the course of our life, if you experience mental health problems, it could affect your thinking, your mood and behavior, and all of these things could be affected. You see, many factors contribute to mental health problems, including biological factors such as genes and brain chemistry, life experiences such as trauma and abuse, and finally, family history and mental health problems. Now, one of the persons that I wanted to refer to was Dr. Joy DeGruy, and she wrote a book called Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. Now, what I found very interesting was when I brought in, when I had a discussion with the Black librarian,
right?
Tamir, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. For a moment, it seemed like I wasn't here. All right. So when I had a discussion with you earlier, and I spoke about Dr. Joy, and you referred to her as Dr. Joy Leary, right? You brought it to my attention. While we are not psychology experts, we can talk to the people, we can talk about and inform our audience of the people who are. Now, one of the things that I've brought to light over a number of different shows, and I'll do it again, is Marcus Garvey, the phrase mental slavery. But there has been, from my understanding from speaking to you, a multitude of scholarly books written about the subject. And I'm asking you, could you enlighten us and give reference to some of the research that has been done by African Americans as it deals or pertains to mental slavery for African Americans in the U.S.?
I like to start to say that whenever I make an error, I like to make a correction. That is correct. Her name is Dr. Joy DeGruy, and it is the post-traumatic slave syndrome. But if we're dealing with psychology, if we go as far back as Kemet or Egypt, as many people would know, and just in African civilizations in general, everything was part of the base of the culture from a psychosociological perspective, whereby the community was always involved with being able to rectify an issue or a situation. For example, if a person in some cultures dreamt ill will about somebody else, they would wake up and apologize. So there was always this open situation where people were able to deal with each other and be open and honest. And if there was an issue, opposed to actually internalizing this particular issue, and you would actually discuss this issue on a collective level, because spirituality is not something that's innate to this one person. It's a collective phenomenon. So I will leave with that first and foremost. So when you're dealing with psychology or the study of psych or the mind, which is the mind is also seen as dealing with spirituality of one's being, and dealing with all the chakras and different levels of the body, and how to govern yourself, that was based on the folk ways and mores of culture. Now, in terms of dealing with psychology, the history of psychology and psychiatry, it always there's many people that discuss issues dealing with black psychology, if you will. If you deal with Dr. Kenneth B. Stamp, who was a leading scholar on making sure a lot of the data that was collected dealing with the experimentation of black dolls was something that was so profound that the Brown versus the Board of Topeka case dealing with Thurgood Marshall was actually won during that particular time. You have additional psychologists who actually did great work, in addition to Dr. Joy DeGruy, who was one person I would actually coin as Dr. Amos Wilson, who wrote several different books, the developmental psychology within black children, awakening the black genius in children, also blueprint for black power, and he used the blueprint for black power. The epicenter of that was dealing with the psychology of blacks, and not just the psychology, but if you can't psychology and not talk about the socioeconomic reality in not just in urban culture of America, but throughout the world. So he was looking at it from a cultural hegemonial perspective. or predetermination, if you will, based on how society is set up, based on capitalism, the spiritual system, so on and so forth, stuff like that. So there's been a lot of great works. There's another great author by the name of John Blasingame. John Blasingame, who was a PhD who studied history and actually wrote several different books, noted books. One book is entitled Slave Testimony, which gives a litany of narratives of slaves and how the slaves was actually orientated. Some of the psychosexual stuff that some of the slaves were going through during that particular time, how they dealt with the situation. So it was like pretty much a slave testimony. If you look at the book Oliver North, a book, the movie written entitled 12 Years of a Slave, written by Oliver North, was talks about the impact of him being free at one time and actually going into slavery and the psychology of it, the psychological impact from a historical perspective. You have another author who wrote a book during the dawn of 19th century entitled by the name of Kenneth Stamp. It's called The Peculiar Institution, and The Peculiar Institution deals with some of the social ills and how slavery was governed and some of the sociological stuff and the torment that a lot of the bondsmen and bondsmen had went through during that particular time. So there's a plethora, and then Mary Frances Berry writes it with a book with Dr. John Blasingame talking about Black Law, White Resistance. And it's talking about slavery from a legal perspective, but you can't talk about slavery from a legal perspective if you're talking in terms of black codes and so on and so forth, but not determining the psychological impact of that.
Okay, let me cut you off because you are a wealth of knowledge, and I can see that you will continue to go on. But one of the things that I do want to highlight for the audience at this point is the fact that there is a wealth of knowledge, and as you explained to me in our previous conversation before the show, is that when you talk about mental slavery, you don't have to look far to find information. There's a wealth of information. Mr. Davis, would you agree to that?
There's a wealth of information, and one of the things I like to do as a librarian is look at the archival information in a lot of our institutions. If you go to the Schomburg Black Research Center, you can find great information. If you look at the Morling and Spingarn Library down at the at Howard University, you can find great information about Black people files and the type of information that was collected. And a lot of information that haven't came out as of yet because it's been stored.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you to hold up. I apologize. But
no,
I have
cool.
to be
family, yo. I know you will beat me up when you see me, all right.
Okay. All right. I want to, without any hesitation, I want to bring on Mr. Shelton Harris, and we're pretty lively here, but he's going to do a segment of Curtains. Take it away, Mr. Harris.
Okay. All right. Curtains is an exposure and analysis of artists and their work behind the curtain and the stage. Now, many artists and companies have grown rich from the support of our community, but what benefits has the community gained from the artists? Today, we pull back the curtain on a singer and actress who achieved fame in the late 1990s as the lead singer for the group Destiny's Child and then launched a hugely successful solo career. Beyoncé Giselle Knowles was born in September of 1981 in Houston, Texas. And at the age of 9, she formed the group Destiny's Child, which was originally called Girls' Time, with some childhood friends. In 1992, the group lost on the show Star Search. And 3 years later, it was dropped from the recording contract before the album had even been released. But in 1997, Destiny's Child's fortunes reversed with the Columbia recording contract and a debut album that dealt the hit single No, 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 Part 2. Their follow-up album, The Writings on the Wall, earned the group 2 Grammy Awards and sold more than 8 million copies in the United States alone. Survivor, the group's 3rd album, reached the number 1 spot in the Billboard's 200 chart. Now, Beyoncé was clearly the leader of the group and wrote his hit songs for Destiny's Child. and eventually the group parted ways to pursue individual projects. Beyoncé used her songwriting talents to pen her first solo album, Dangerously in Love. The album debuted to rave reviews and was added and was aided by the single Crazy in Love, which featured Jay-Z. It topped the charts around the world. In 2004, Beyoncé won 5 Grammy Awards, including Best Contemporary R&B Album, Best Female R&B Vocal Performance. She dropped her second solo album, B-Day, and it was really buoyed by the top ballad, Irreplaceable, which became her only successful single on that album, but it was enough. In 2008, she and Jay-Z got married, and the union became one of the top-earning couples in the entertainment industry. Later that year, she released the album I Am Sasha Fierce. The album as a whole generated several hits, including the song Single Ladies Put a Ring on It, and it contributed to Beyoncé's dominance in the 2010 Grammy Awards, where she won 6 awards, which included Song of the Year, Best Female Pop Vocalist, and a number of others. And that made her the artist, the best female artist to win the most Grammys in a single night. Okay, now not only was she a great survivor in the music industry, but also someone who cared deeply about other people. The list of charities she supports was both long and varied, but perhaps the greatest contribution was made is the Survivor Foundation, which is an organization she founded with Kelly Rowland to help the victims of Hurricane Katrina. The foundation's achievements were many, including the Music World Cares Christmas Carnival, which is, enables 300 low-income families to enjoy a fun day of food, entertainment, and free toys from the toy giveaway. The singer also held a series of food drives before her concerts in 2006 to collect food for those desperately needed victims. She was also an ambassador for the 2005 World Children's Day and released the song Stand Up for Love, which is the anthem for the event, which takes place annually around the world on November 20th to raise awareness and funds for children's causes. She is also the co-founder of Chime for Change, which is a platform designed to empower women and girls through education, health, and injustice. Now, I must confess, I was unaware of a lot of her pursuits outside of the music, but Beyoncé has proved herself to be an active contributor to those who are in need, both in front of and behind the stage. She is truly a survivor. As a matter of fact, let's hear her interpretation of that word. Nice show.
But I'm stronger. You thought that I'd be broke without you.
Vibrations live on 89.5 from the campus of Seton Hall in South Orange. We're Quest Youth Radio, which is the best youth radio. And I can just reflect on how my team members are going to be jumping all over me for today's broadcast. I'd like to bring in Tanisha Gardner and give us a analysis of the program, and was there anything that stuck out in today's broadcast that hits you in a certain way?
I guess overall the show was good. It was very impactful. We definitely have to expand on it more because there was a lot of valuable information, especially on the mental health, and especially when Walter did the first speaker. It's very powerful just to know the power of the mind and how at that time she was able to open, the first bank, and it's still in existence to today. That is very powerful, and it shows us of the capacity of our minds, and when we do put our minds to things, and I think the power to be over your mind is to know who you are, and constantly remind yourself of who you are spiritually, mentally, and physically, and you will always overcome all things.
Okay. Now, I want to ask another woman, living history, a sister, Val, you're on the line, and I want to allow you an opportunity to basically analyze today's broadcast and provide an input.
Well, thank you for that. I first want to thank Walter for bringing to our attention another great woman from the National Association of Colored Women's Clubs, giving us history on the great women who, forged a path through so many successes that Black women have achieved in our country. And then I want to touch on the Christus Addicts, because we did just celebrate Christus Addicts on Friday, and we in New Jersey have been celebrating it for years, and I feel kind of bad because in our history, years ago, we used to have a major Christus Addicts parade in the city of Newark. I believe Adonisio was the mayor at that time. But I'm just wondering, and if, you could find out, why is that something, Christus Addicts Day, something now that goes under the radar when this was an escaped slave who, when he died, he was five people who died on that day, March 5th in 1770. But since he was the first one to die, He was buried with honors. He was an escaped slave whose body laid in state. And about 12,000 people came to observe his body when he passed. And he's had statues and a holiday, you know, that took us years. It took us years to get a holiday for Dr. King, someone who spent his entire adult life, you know, fighting for our causes. But this single act of bravery that this man did, he was able to get a holiday, and it's been celebrated, at least recognized in New Jersey since 1949. So I would just like to find out how now it's gone under the radar, and because, you know, Newark used to have a lot of big celebrations for that day, and it's now something that's really not talked about anymore. But thank you for allowing me my piece.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we're going to push on, because I do realize there was time that has been missing. But without looking backwards, looking forward, I'd like, Walter, for you to do your next segment of Curtains.
Okay. So for my segment on Curtains, her name is Ella Fitzgerald. As people already know who Ella Fitzgerald already is, I want to talk about her contributions besides just her music as well. But, you know, it was difficult for venues to deny Fitzgerald on the basis of race when her talent was loved by so many and she could draw huge crowds. Of her fans, one of the most prominent was singer, actress, and icon Marilyn Monroe. She was such a big fan of Fitzgerald that she used her connections to help advance Fitzgerald's career and ultimately allow more people the opportunity to witness her performances. In October of 1957, Monroe made a call to a nightclub in Los Angeles on behalf of Fitzgerald. Monroe used her social status and popularity to make a deal with them. If they allowed Fitzgerald to perform, Monroe promised that she would take a front row seat every night. And that is exactly what happened. Monroe's presence in the front row night after night will create powerful publicity for the club, a deal they found attractive. As a result, Fitzgerald became the first African-American to perform at Macabo, and it gave her long career a big boost. During her life, Fitzgerald was awarded the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, NAACP, Equal Justice Award, and the American Black Achievement Award, as well as many other honors that celebrated her talents and accomplishments, both in jazz, in the jazz world, and in the civil rights movement. Fitzgerald was seen as an inspiration. Her drive pushed her career forward, and by using her talent and help from friends, colleagues, and manager, she was able to break down seemingly impossible barriers. And that concludes my segment on Ella Fitzgerald. And, you know, that was just a small piece of the many things and accomplishments she has, but, you know, I want to just to simplify it to how her career really blossomed was because of really the help of Marilyn Monroe. And, you know, also besides singing, you know, the award she was given from the NAACP and other civil rights organizations and black organizations, which showed her commitment to her community and her people. And, you know, also I want to also bring in Mr. Shelby Harris, who's also somebody who knows of Ella Fitzgerald very well and knows about her. And I just want to bring him in to if he has anything to add on to what I've just said.
Yeah, well, she was definitely an icon when it comes to jazz music as a singer. Excuse me. Yeah, she sang with some of the greats, Count Basie, Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong, and seeing that she was mainly known for scatting, a lot of that stuff really came from her
Well, she said it was from her forgetting some of the words to the songs. So she just, like, sang the melodies in without any words. And that became one of the most innovative aspects in jazz that's been around, and it's been copied so many times, and it was really because of her. And it was, and it's still being done today. You can hear her in a lot of artists out here today.
Okay, and now I have an example of that. Sit back, relax, don't you go anywhere. This is Quest Community Vibrations featuring Ella Fitzgerald.
Thank you. Thank you so much. thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
I think that was a great example of the songstress Ella Fitzgerald. And right now, Tamir Davis, originally you were brought here today to give a one or two sentence quick short synopsis of Women's History Month and why is it important?
I would say, in a nutshell, I believe that in reality that, you know, like, for example, my household, it's a matrilineal system that exists. My wife runs the house. Traditionally, you have traditional societies whereby you didn't have it as a patrilineal system, but you have it as a matrilineal system. And I think that the universe would be far more better if we would respect the female energy. Say, for example, if you go into martial arts, some of the most strongest disciplines in martial arts are feminine type style, in terms of the martial arts style. If we look at the history of the United States of America, it goes far back as Sojourner Truth, and the energy that she brought to bring out the suffrage movement. It was very important. It's a great book that deals with that subject matter entitled Born of Liberty. So I believe in a matrilineal system in the same vein in which Frederick Douglass was a feminist for African-American and Caucasian and or American white women as well. I think that it sets the balance. We have to respect the energy of women, the woman's been in power and will continue to be in power, and we just have to respect that energy. As I said, my household is ran by my wife.
Okay.
And it works for me.
All right. We're gonna stop you right there. Calvin, you've been with us for this entire show. I want to thank you so much. Throughout all our bumps and scrapes, we managed to get to the end of the program, and I'd like for your analysis of today's broadcast.
Very quickly, Mr. Bay, it was a great show, very informative. Love the segment on Christmas Attic. Also appreciate the information that the young brother gave us about information, because information is power. Thank you very much. You guys have a great day.
Okay, and we're going to ask the Tanisha, any last words?
Just stay true to who you are and don't let nothing get in your way.
Okay, and Walter, take us away.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations for live on 89.5 from the campus of Seton Hall in South Orange. And our motto is, Quest Youth Radio is the best
youth radio.
Yep. Thank you.